From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who build them.
Look, if you had people with carelessness and laziness, that's a different game.
Mm-hmm.
But when people are trying to do something and it just doesn't work out, you know what? That's life. And that was okay in my business.
I'm Connor Carney, and that's the voice of Vincent Carton, former CEO of Manor Farm. Following on from last week's episode, where we learned how Vincent came to own the business and how he nearly lost it in 2003, today you'll hear how Vincent and the team got the business back on track and the strategy they used to grow profits from 500,000 to 13 million in just 7 years. Vincent advised that some of the concepts he talks about in this interview are best explained through some short videos, which I have included in the show notes. We dive back into the second half of this chat, where Vincent describes surviving through a period where all but three of their competitors went out of business, creating a huge opportunity for Manor Farm.
You went through a difficult period, you got through it, you were profitable again, or
yeah, so immediately profits really shot up. We far more efficient, so our cost base came down. We were now in the millions, making a couple of million a year. But over the next so long, Ireland, remember now, 2008, 2009, 2010, was good for us in the sense that Ireland was in a recession. They wanted cheap meat and chicken's the cheapest. Mm-hmm. Enterprise Ireland were running a program called Transform. It was a program where they took the company senior team. In our case, there was six of us. And over a year, they brought us through a process that helped us to, the output of it was a strategic document for the business. So we wrote our first 5-year plan with their help, outlined it. We spent a week in Babson College in Boston, which was fantastic. And we outlined our strategy to ourselves. We got our mission, vision, and values right. We understood the purpose of what we were trying to do. We'd broken it down into sub-projects. And then, as you I said to you, Connor, there's a couple of videos I think people should see.
Mm-hmm.
One was the idea that if you're implementing strategy, understand the whirlwind. You might tell your
absolutely, yeah. We'll have that in the show notes, yeah.
And then the second one was the idea of what a first follower does, why that's important. And in our case, we created our own first followers. So in an organization of 830-odd people, we created a team of about 23 change group. And we would report to this change group. And these were for people from all levels of the organization. It wasn't about your title now. It was about your attitude to change. We just felt these people were positive and they wanted to see the company go, and we wanted to tell them how. So when a project was coming to their level, they knew what part it played and knew about the organization, and they were totally supportive of it. And then the issues we came up against was the whirlwind, as I said, where people are just so busy with their day-to-day job. We recognized that we had to create capacity for key people and yet keep them in control. We did that. And then the most pervasive problem of all, well, that's the way we always do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had tackled that, and again, I presented to you today the Five Monkeys video. So it explains to you how inertia can build in a business. The antidote to that was factual information today. Not somebody's opinion about what happened yesterday. It was, give me the facts. And let's all look at the facts, and let's look at them honestly. One of our values was this idea of, let's get the facts. Because so often it's just people's opinion, and your opinion is as good as mine.
And so instead of really thinking about why something should be done in a certain way for efficiency or for profit, people were doing things just because they had done it the same way for 20 years.
Yeah, and they were told that's the way we do it here.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, when you went to those people and said, well, why did you tell them to do that? Well, that's what I was told.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on. But that has to be challenged, and facts is what challenged that. And so the business really thrived, and it really drove on. At the same time, this was all happening, companies were going out of business in the industry, and the last year really was 2012, when two companies went bust at the same time. And the effect of that was amazing, because now there was only three companies in South and Moy Park in the North. There was four companies and there was six supermarkets. And in effect, we didn't increase our prices. What we did was we just looked at the promotion pricing, which was where we were getting killed. And we just said, look, no, we won't. Thanks. We don't want to participate in that promotion. And it quickly became evident that the supermarkets couldn't run promotions unless they had a number of us to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what effectively happened is our prices rose because of less promotions, not more. And that was one thing. And then the other thing, I suppose, that happened from our point of view was these efficiency projects that we'd identified through the strategic study, we implemented them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got them to work. By making lots of mistakes, don't get me wrong. Actually, that's one point I want to make to you as well, Connor, as I can say, is mistake making, in my view, is a huge opportunity for business. So in our case, what we did was, and I gave the example of, let's say we've lost a customer. So what we did was we sat down, a pretty big group of us, and we tried to work back. And the group didn't only involve the person whose issue. So let's say there was a Tesco account executive who had a problem, didn't make a sale of a particular new product. We would have had all the Dunns and the Aldi's, Lidl, all the other key accounts would have been in the room. The finance people would have been there because they became the source of information. We set them up to be able to give us independent information about whatever was going on. And then you would have had the production people who were obviously going to be supplying this customer. They wanted to have a say as well. So with this multi-task group, we say, right, what happened when we lost the customer? Right, why did we lose it? We lost it because we were overpriced. Why were we overpriced? And we went back and back and back. And me as CEO, I often would come to the point and say, okay, stop again. So, you know, 6 months before we lost the customer, this is a key decision we made here. We said we were going to increase the cost because we wanted to recover. We wanted to put in extra super ingredients to just encourage the customer to try it. But it meant that our product. Okay, I understand why you did that. And by the way, if I was in the room at that moment, I would have made the same stage. So that was okay to make that decision then. I actually agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to learn. And everybody else now is listening to this. So it's okay to make mistakes as long as we learn. That was a hugely positive. So we found people coming forward now, telling us about the mistakes they made. And that's okay, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
And you go through the same process and you learn. So for us, mistake making was a learning process. And it was hugely empowering and nobody got chastised for it. You actually got a lot more honesty in the business. People actually volunteering that they made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you had people with carelessness and laziness, that's a different game.
Mm-hmm.
But when people are trying to do something and it just doesn't work out, you know what? That's life. And that was okay in my business to do that. And those things, again, it meant honesty mattered. So honesty in front of the customer, honesty to ourselves, and then reporting back to people what the honest position is. To my mind, it's a positive way of running a business.
How important were the mission, vision, values?
Hugely important. Mm-hmm. So our mission was to produce great food with care since 1776. So we wanted to be able to say to a farmer, to a production worker, to a salesman, to a CEO, can you believe in that? Yes, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do, okay? Our mission was to be the preferred supplier of Irish chicken to the Irish market. So preferred supplier meant that when somebody was buying chicken, they'd take them on a farm. Because we know they produce the best stuff, they're most innovative for, they've got great support services. You know, the list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those things. So they encapsulated our business. And then our behaviors was really, really important to us. Nurturing was important. We wanted our people to learn. We found value in them learning the business. Because now all of a sudden, they weren't making mistakes because they learned from their mistakes. So that was a hugely important one. Productivity was extremely important to us, that we had to, everything we did had to add, not subtract or nothing. So everybody had to explain how they were contributing to it, and then honesty. Want nothing but the results. Mm-hmm. Don't want your emotion. We don't want that. Tell us what happened. And this is what I do. And we could call anybody out on those things. And if somebody was trying to be mealy mouthed or speak both sides, hold on, that's not our values.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how would you implement at lower levels down in the organization? How did you ensure that people were sticking with this and buying into the?
Yeah. So again, this change group were really useful. It's a big number of people, 23 people. They would have been pretty much involved, and they were. Everybody was empowered to call somebody else out. And I remember I being called out at one of these change meetings. And put the hand up, yes, you're right, I'm wrong. I have to change. You know, that's what we all agree to. That sends out a message, and they do it as well. And when we call people out, people respected the values
mm-hmm.
and said, yeah. So that, getting it down the organization. Can I say we got all the way down? No, and I'll tell you why I can say that. We ran a thing called a culture survey, a company called Denison did it. And basically, every person has to fill in an online questionnaire. And what we found out was that, no, not everybody was committed as we were, and not everybody believed in it and all that. So it's a work in progress, and it will always be.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, we can get better all the time. But this idea of at least finding out what everybody thinks is a good one, in my opinion.
You don't have to give me any figures, but what was the magnitude, I suppose, of implementing this stuff and the strategy?
I was saying, I've said it publicly, the number was 26. So from our profitability in 2010 to our profitability in 2017, we went from $500,000 to $13 million. And it's gone on since. It's a lovely coordinating, mm-hmm. the fact that it's open and honest motivates people, they get more out of the work, they get to make changes, and they don't have to do things by rote.
Mm-hmm.
They can be participating. It's a positive all the way.
What was the space of time that the 26 times?
So that was from 2010 up to 2017. That's that period. Mm-hmm. We did have a second strategy document produced in 2015 that would take us up to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to say that we've actually delivered what we have planned for in 2020.
Yeah.
It's happening this year. I can see it.
But it is incredible. Like, if you think about any investment that someone might make to get a 26x over a 7-year period is incredible.
Yeah.
And
some of the ones that we found on, just when you're talking about investment, it's a bit like putting down the keel bone of a boat. In other words, you've got the main superstructure in place, mm-hmm. but all the add-on investments, the bits that you add on,
mm-hmm.
They are just so profitable,
mm-hmm.
you know. You could get them back in 6 months, some of the investments, because you were just improving what you were already doing.
Were you in charge of capital allocation in that
sense? So the group was, again, the senior group, there was six of us. My brother was director of projects. So we recognized that people had their day job. This is back to the whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed support to put in something new.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did. We had a projects director. As I said, my brother, co-owner of the business, he was really very much involved in that. And then we had finance, sales and marketing, processing, and agri. So they were the six groups. And it was pretty well coordinated.
Mm.
And again, we'd review it and see how we are on our projects. And yeah, we had to change them over time. That's a good thing. The central idea of we know where we're going and we know how we're going to get there. This is what we need to do, lads.
What made you decide to sell the business in 2017?
Yeah, so at the same time all of this was running, in 2012, our family, along with four of the families, set up a thing that was initiated by Philip McKeown of Musgraves to create a thing called the Family Business Network. And the idea was that so many family businesses have had problems, particularly around succession, with lack of planning and lack of discussion and, quite frankly, an older patriarch who would have driven the business on so far and then left a vacuum behind him, and it just fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, along with another four families led by the McKeowns, which own Musgraves, we founded a thing called the Family Business Network. And it's based on the fact that so many family businesses have had troubles in the past, particularly over the succession issue, and where a patriarch has driven the business on and then left a vacuum when he disappears. And the way they learn in this network is by hearing other people's stories. And the story that blew me away was the first one I heard. And if I can tell you, if I may.
Absolutely.
So this lady was Anne Berner. She was from Finland. She was the chair of Family Business Network in Finland. And she came to tell us her story. And her family story was that her grandfather, in 1936, established a fabrics business, basically with traditional fabrics, blankets and soft furnishings like cushions and rugs and stuff. And of course, war broke out in 1939. He sent his four children and wife to Switzerland, and he stayed on. And what was incredible is that they have his letters that did eventually get through to Switzerland from Finland. He wrote, the benefit they have is they wrote down his philosophy that was incorporated in these letters. And he believed in three things. The first thing he believed in was education of his children. So he was going to use his money to, first of all, educate his family. And I think two of them turned out to be doctors. And the second thing he believed in was youthful energy. So the next generation were to get the business when they were 26, which I found incredible, but that's what he said, and also. And the final one, which is even more profound, was that a family business is not about the industry you're in, but it is a vessel for passion for business within the family. And their story bears that out. So Anne's father took over the business in the 1950s, wasn't interested in your traditional fabrics, was interested in the modern yarns of polyester and nylon. He built that business up and sold off the other one, invested in those. And Anne herself took over the business in 1984. She wasn't interested in Russell yarns, so didn't invest in those. She was interested in yarns from a fashion point of view, and has built a business to be a 300 million euro business. And in 2012, she informed us that her son was going to be taking over at age 26, and he was interested in cars. And the crew was there, hold on a sec, are you telling us you're going to allow a 26-year-old kid to sell your business and invest in car dealerships, which is what he wanted to do, all from Finland all the way down the Baltic coast into Poland. That was basically his logic. And she said, yes. Not only that, we have retained, we know our grandfather's wishes. We all believe in them. We know he's going to sell the business so we can take cash off the table if we want to. But we have decided that we want him to do this. And that's what happened. I met her about 4 years later in a World Congress down in Dubai of the FBN. And sure enough, he had taken over. And that's what he was doing.
Was he performing well? Did you know? Did you
hear? I didn't hear. But I don't know is the truth of it. But I suppose I was less interested in that, but in what it meant for me. So that said to me, hold on. Now, you've asked to understand, myself and my brother owned the business. By the way, in 2012, we also decided that our key manager should get a piece of the pie. And it was one of the best decisions we made, because the thing just worked. Went. Everybody was fired up. We're all aligned. We're all looking at the same thing, and that's what we did. At the same time, I had a situation where I have five daughters, and my brother Justin has three daughters. And one of the things that we learned from another family company in England, this one in England, they learned that how to engage the next generation in terms of becoming part of the business and getting to know it. And the key thing for us was to teach them how to be good owners of a business. So what does a good owner do? A good owner has a part to play in deciding the next leader of the business, the values of the business, not so much the mission, that's left up to management, but the values of the business, and also to understand and challenge from their point of view what the business is doing. And we learned that they came up with a number of very interesting ideas, one of which we implemented, which was we created a charity fund for the girls to operate, so that if one girl wanted to invest in one charity 1 year, she'd get the support of another girl on the basis that she supported that other girl in the following year. So they started to learn to work together. At the time, I think Justin's was youngest was 17, and my eldest was just in their early 30s. So there was quite a different group, and they were cousins. They, you know, they're not sisters. So they had to work together to work out. We tried to explain to them the strategy group. One other thing I learned from a German family business, which I do to this day, and it's this. Can you imagine a child coming into a family business that's been hugely successful? And they come in and they see their dad or their uncle or whoever it is running this business that is massive. And the guy doesn't actually have to tell anybody to do anything. All he has to show is interest in something, and everybody's off running to try and form. And they say, how in God's name are we ever going to emulate this? You know, in one of the most important things about succession is communication. It's actually understanding one another. So I'll give you the case that he gave us at the time. He said, can you imagine the son comes in to dad and says, Dad, I really think we should connect more with our customers over the internet. You know, really should. And the old man says, hold on for a second. I'm 30 years in this business. I have all my key customers on speed dial. I know them all personally. What do I need to do with the internet? And with that, the issue's correct. So what this guy came up with was, in my view, pure gold. And it was, tell them about your failures. So this is for a senior gen who is successful, brings this the next shareholders and says to them, here's a cock-up I made. And uses their experience and their knowledge of today, how the mistake was made, the effect it had both personally and the business, the risk that became out of that, the long-term effect, and what was the reason for it? Where did the mistake go? And so we started this. We started a shareholder weekend, and the idea was that we'd talk to our girls, and one of the parts they love is about telling me the failures. Mm. Unfortunately, I have plenty of them. But the benefit is that you then say something that I think is extremely generous. You say to them, look, if you feel I'm not listening to you, then remind me of my failures. Mm. And so we go back to the case in point. Dad, I think we should use the internet to connect with our customers. No, son, I know them all. I've got them on speed. Dad, do you remember that cock-up you told me about? Mm. And in that moment, the senior is reduced and the junior is increased so they can now communicate. Mm-hmm. And it is hugely powerful.
Really?
Hugely powerful, because with success does come failures. Of course they do. Mm-hmm. We've all had them. And it's part of success is failure. And understanding the generosity of the older generation, empowering the younger, and also giving them the benefit of their wisdom. And of course it's with your family, and there's nobody's going to abuse it. But it's the one thing the girls love us to talk about, is the power of failure.
So being in that family business network, do you feel you would have benefited from having that earlier in the running the business? Or was it more beneficial for succession planning?
Would I benefit? I think we would have benefited further earlier, absolutely. Because what we found out, what I've since found out, is on a whole range of issues. Okay, family is one part of it, but when you start getting talking to somebody else, and family business tend to keep quiet, they don't blast about themselves. And you sound, and we start talking about, you know, how do you look after your stars in the business? What do you do for them? Mm. Or how do you deal with internationalization? How can you break into a market? Well, Jesus, I've done it. This is the way I did. Mm-hmm. Hello. All of a sudden, like any sort of network,
yeah. You
were picking up. But because you were coming from a place, talking about family, what I found out is others are so generous in wanting to help you. For me, it was particularly useful for the succession planning. And the reason was, we then went through a formal process, helped by another family, Irish family company. We got this thing called a family charter. So a family charter is an emotional legal document. And it lays out the role the family plays within a family company, about decisions, how they're made, choice of leaders, values, the right of employment. And some of them have got so extreme. So for instance, Musgrave, with 125 shareholders, will not allow any shareholder to work in the business anymore. That's how extreme mm-hmm. it's gone. Whereas I've seen other family businesses where everybody's in, girlfriends, boyfriends, second wives, first wives. Mm-hmm. It's the total opposite.
Yeah.
And one of the things we found out is that everybody does it differently. Mm-hmm. And the key bit is to find out what people want. So what we found out from our second generation is that my daughters really aren't that passionate about chicken.
Mm.
Not surprising, really. But they do like the idea of the family business.
Mm-hmm.
So when they said that to us, or when we got that idea from them, we then said, okay, we're now free to sell the chicken business. We want to keep going as a family business. So it's the capital we get from one, we're preserving it with a view to reinvesting in the girls. And in the meantime, my daughters have, as I say, biology's caught up. My eldest three are now family. Mm. They've got children, babies, and they're interested in family. So that's no issue for us. We will manage the money in the meantime,
mm-hmm.
and they're very much part of it. They're shareholders in the business. And we'll manage that money until the time comes that they want to invest in business. They've given us ideas of what they do want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what it's about. That's mm-hmm. that's our plan right now.
And are you buying businesses with a view to the girls running it in yep. the future? Yeah. And who will run them in the meantime?
So that's our job.
Mm.
To be honest with you, I feel very uncomfortable with that because I don't know some of these industries, and as I'm sure you can imagine, some of them have a female bias.
Mm-hmm.
If you're depending on us, that's one thing. We then will have to depend on the management team who are running it currently. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is we might wait. We might just look after the capital, build it up and have it ready
yeah.
for you guys when you want to move.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. They've all said that, look, not now, let's keep it. That's fine. Yeah. I have no problem with that.
One thing I was going to ask you was that how have you managed to cope with not having such a pressurized day job, such a...
Oh, huge, yeah. I have to say, I came out without a plan.
Mm-hmm.
There was a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled, genuinely. I felt depressed
mm-hmm.
About 3 months after. And I really did not know this idea of a day with so much time.
Mm-hmm.
I was not used to that.
Yeah.
I'd been trained all my life to work hard, take responsibility, make decisions, and now I was doing none of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tried to see what could I do, and I'm on the main board of Scandi, the company that bought Manor Farm. I'm on that board in Stockholm, and I go over there, except if, obviously with COVID it's all Zoom now. I've also joined the board of a chicken company in Saudi Arabia who's going public,
mm-hmm.
and again fascinated with that as well. But what I wanted to do was try and see could I help other Irish businesses who are medium-sized and want to grow large.
Mm-hmm.
And my plan was to offer them support and, if necessary, invest as well. Again, COVID has buggered that up on me.
Yeah.
But that would be a longer-term plan,
mm-hmm.
to see how can I help people to realise the potential and offer some words of help and yeah. Support along the way.
Within the food industry?
No. In fact, I find I'm helping a startup at the moment,
mm-hmm.
and nothing to do with food. I just find there's some really basic stuff that is important.
Mm-hmm.
How do you connect with the customer? How do you maintain cash control?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the facts of your business? And where do they lead you?
Mm-hmm.
I just find, and then I think genuinely the internet is such an amazing thing, is how can you leverage it?
Mm-hmm.
In whatever you do. So those are sort of the general things. But there's some basics too, is how you treat people. Obviously, I now know how to set strategy,
mm-hmm.
implementation of strategy, and the pitfalls therein.
Yeah.
And I think I can help in that regard as well.
Mm-hmm.
And genuinely, I would like to create wealth. That's what I want to do. I think the idea of charities is great, and I'd support them and all that. But my thing, where I get a buzz, is not so much the money per se, but is building the team that creates the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That, to my mind, is fantastic fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to do. I have to be honest with you. The offers aren't flooding in the door, but that is the plan.
Yeah.
And when this COVID is over, I'll try and go back at it again. One thing I am very much aware of, though, someone like me, my experience and my connections are, there's a sell-by date on them, mm-hmm. which is running out quick. You know what I mean? The people that I would have known who were leading organizations are all like me, retired.
Sure.
So you've lost that connectivity per mm-hmm. se, but still I think some of the learnings that I've learnt,
mm-hmm.
and as I said, wearing the t-shirt and all that
yeah.
along the way has value.
Mm-hmm.
Not least the one we were talking about when you're in a horrible recession, like I think is about to come,
mm-hmm.
and the pressure it puts on businesses and then the people running those businesses, they need guidance, in my view, just to be able to find their way through the darkness.
A fill-up to what you had back in the day.
Exactly. Yeah. And fill-up with maybe invest money, because I do think people need funds to realize what they're doing. So that was good for then, and I understood exactly why he said that. But I think if you're going to drive, usually it does take a reinvestment.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, I also found it's amazing what you can do when you don't have money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How I remember a guy explaining to me that you're at your weakest, you're at your strongest when you're weakest. In other words, when I was nearly going bust, I had to do amazing things. There was no other answer. You just had to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what? You called people down because you couldn't afford. So if a union asked you, would you, sorry, no.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go on strike. Yeah, well, off you go. But I can do nothing about it. So you're at your strongest when you're at your weakest, which is an unusual way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I learned, by the way, which is a fascinating case study, is Polaroid, the company. It went bust, Chapter 11. And in Babson, that course we did, the question was, who was responsible for Polaroid going bust? And there was four CEOs of that business. The guy who set it up and was the genius. And then there was two or three others after us. And the answer was, it's always the last guy. Because no matter what, you can always choose to change tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And in his case, they actually invented digital photography that's on every phone today. They had it all, but they had so much invested in chemical that they didn't change, and hence went bust. And you know, that's a learning for everybody. No matter what you're in, if the world changes, you're not going to do very well if you keep doing the same thing.
Yeah. Vincent Carton, thank you very much for joining me.
You're very welcome.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.